The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trump, and I'm your host, Katie Trump. Well, it's officially baseball season, y'all. Na-na-na-na-na-na. Baseball, bitches. Very fucking exciting, too. I've got Yankees and Red Sox on mute right now. So while I'm recording this, 3-2 right now. Red Sox up on the Yanks in the bottom of the second inning. Rizzo just knocked one out of the park, which made it 3-2 right now. So it's a battle right now between the Yanks and the Sox, and it's just fucking great to have some baseball on. Always love the start of a new season of every single sport, and it's also fun when it's the end of another season because, you know, we got NBA playoffs right around the corner. So I will be going over that here in a bit as well, but I just love having some baseball on. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I'm just excited to see what happens this season. I just love when the season starts too, because we just have so much baseball to go, and I'm ready for it. Also ready for the NBA playoffs too, even though my shitty ass Lakers won't be participating. But like I said, we'll get to the NBA talk here in a bit. But let's start today's episode off with the national championship. It was on Monday night. And what a motherfucking game. You know, I didn't think that the national championship was going to be able to compete with the Final Four matchup between Duke and North Carolina. But this came pretty close. You know, at first, Kansas started out really bad. Like, North Carolina was just dominating them on every end. And I was like, man, is Kansas even aware that they're playing a game today? Because that was like the worst first half it feels like they have had all season, especially at least in the tournament for damn sure. So they just came out flat. They were down by 15 points at halftime, and they were actually down 16 was the largest deficit they had at one point in the first half. So they go into halftime 15 down. Now, I wasn't counting them out just because, for one, North Carolina really came out on fire. And so, you know, I wasn't shocked that they kind of lost gas in the second half, especially as the game wore on. And but Kansas, they just battled back. They just did what they did. They play that suffocating basketball. They just stayed the course, let their three-point shooters make the shots that they needed to make. And they ended up winning the national championship 72-69. That was a great battle by North Carolina. Got to give it up to the coach, Hubert Davis. You know, when he was when he became the coach in the offseason, I mean, first of all, he had big shoes to fill, Roy Williams. But it kind of felt like he might just be a bridge in between whoever their next coach is going to be. And it turns out, no, this is going to be their next coach, I would say, at least for the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully longer for their sake. But, I mean, to get to the national championship game in your first season and to have your entire team buy into your system in the first year and to take your alma mater, because, you know, Hubert Davis went there. He played basketball there. And so to take your alma mater and in their first season to a national championship, they did lose in heartbreaking fashion, but you can't hate on what North Carolina did this season. And I just think their future's bright with what they've got going on at coach. And I mean, really, in the end, I just kind of feel like Kansas experience was what got them the win. Because, you know, their team has basically been their core team for the last about three seasons now. Then you also have their coach, Bill Self. This was not his first rodeo in a national championship. So they were just the more experienced team. They also got lucky because Baycott was injured at one point, and so he was knocked out of the second half of the second quarter. So, you know, that it was just difficult to overcome. And those last two sequences that North Carolina had, you know, Kansas really just held it down and they were able to just make sure that they didn't make the shot. So Kansas, very well deserved, great national championship, great way to end March Madness. And I just really enjoyed the game and just a great game by both teams. And just a couple of random things about the game that I wanted to point out. First and foremost, I usually watch pregame. I mean, unless something else is on, but I'll watch a lot of the pregame. And one thing I've noticed in the pregame, because they always got to have some musical guest who usually sucks, by the way. And this year's musical guest did suck, at least in my opinion. But I feel like I have seen this band be like the band that plays the pregame for like the last like 3 years at every single event, and that is goddamn Imagine Dragons. I think their music sucks, and I think they're a shitty band. They're like they're like a generic like Smash Mouth band to me, and I just fucking hate music like that. That's just my personal opinion. If you like Imagine Dragons, you can go marry Imagine Dragons for all I give a fuck. I just think they fucking suck, and I'm sick to death of seeing them clog up my fucking pregame shit with their shitty fucking music that I don't give a crap about. But when I saw them come out, I'm like, Jesus Christ, is this the only fucking band they can find that will do this pregame shit? Like, Jesus Christ, get them out of here and their crappy, stupid music that all sounds the same, by the way. Every one of their songs sounds exactly the same to me. That's why I hate their music, because they're like Smash Mouth or Nickelback. Just one of those generic bands who doesn't swear and who's just really boring and lame and, look at us. And they just fucking suck, and I just hate that kind of crappy music. So I just had to go on an Imagine Dragons rant. Just also something else I've noticed, and this is something I've noticed with the Superdome in New Orleans, because the national championship this year was played in New Orleans. And I notice this all the time, and it was just something that I have to point out on my show. Every time they do a, you know, in between, when they're coming back from commercial breaks or whatever, they always show an outside shot of the arena. Well, especially at night, but also in the daytime, the Superdome looks like one big old titty. I'm sorry. I just had to say it. I know I'm not the only one who thinks this, but that's just what I'm thinking. Every time they do, especially at night, because it's all like decorated and shit. And you're like, I'm just like, dude, that's just like one big old titty right there on screen. And then another thing I noticed, you know, I've already gone on my national anthem rant about how shitty just in general I think the song is. I don't care what the meaning of it is. I don't have any issues with our military or being an American. I just think the national anthem is a boring, shitty song just in generally speaking. But every fucking national championship or Super Bowl or NBA Finals game, we always gotta wheel out the national fucking anthem and play it every time. Well, Jesus Christ, I didn't think the national anthem could get worse, but whoever the hell these people were who played the national anthem, this was one of the worst fucking national anthems I've ever heard in my entire life. First of all, since it was in New Orleans, they were a jazz band, and so they had to jazzify it up, and let me tell you, it didn't make the song any better. It actually made it worse, in my opinion, because when they first started, I was like, what in the actual fuck is this? Well, then they started playing, and I'm like, okay, that's the national anthem. Didn't think it could get worse, but they certainly did. And then also something else I had to point out is the lead singer of whoever did this awful national anthem rendition. She looked like a handful of balloons with whatever the fuck she was wearing. It was like all this rainbow colored shit. And she just looked like when you're walking into Disneyland and you see the dude holding the handful of balloons, she looked like the fucking handful of balloons. I was like, what is this shit? Goddamn national anthem is always a fucking joke. Why do we keep doing it? Oh yeah, because we got to pretend like we give a shit about America during fucking sports games. Even though most of that shit's paid for by our tax dollars, just so y'all know. But I digress. So let's talk about a couple things happened in the NFL this weekend, or this week. Not a whole lot, but Stephon Diggs, the wide receiver of the Buffalo Bills, signed a huge extension this week with $70 million guaranteed. Got to say, that's a great move by Buffalo. He's fit right into their system. You could tell he's got rep with Josh Allen, the quarterback. And I just think this is a great move by them, because why not? Why not extend a dude who's already played well his entire time with you so far? So congrats to Stephon Diggs. Very well deserved. And then also, did you guys see Deebo Samuel, wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers? He did it. He scrubbed his Instagram. Oh my God. The new fucking stupid idiotic thing where we got to read into it. What is the hidden message behind the scrubbing of the Instagram account or whatever fucking social media? I don't have Instagram. That's why you never fucking hear me saying, oh, follow me on this. I really couldn't give a shit if you follow me on anything. Just as long as you're listening to my show, if you want to go listen to my music, watch my music videos, that's cool. Couldn't give a shit if you follow me on social media, because I barely pay attention to social media, especially if you're trying to get into my DMs. Because let me tell y'all, I actually miss probably important messages because I have this thing where I basically don't really answer any of my social media messages unless I know you, or I could tell that you're only talking to me about business, because lots of times my inbox is mostly full of stupid perverts sending me their fucking dick pics. So if you're ever like, gee, why didn't Katie ever respond to me? It's because of all the fucking pervs up in my inbox. I don't know what about me makes you think I want that shit, but I certainly fucking don't. So this is Katie's PSA to don't fucking send me your goddamn dick pics. I don't look at them. I don't acknowledge them. And even if I did, I'd be grossed out and wouldn't want it. So suck your own dick, stupid fucks. So yeah, if you're ever wondering why I haven't responded to a message to you on social media and you have an actual like business thing for me that you want to work on me with, go to my website, katietrop.net, and I have an email address up there. Those are the appropriate ways to contact me for business shit, because sorry, most of the time I ain't answering my DMs because there's too many disgusting dicks in there. So that was my little rant on stupid ass social media and how stupid it is that I have to hear about every time a player scrubs his social media. It's got to mean something. Hey, sometimes it does, but that's just the most ridiculous way that this world works, is that, oh my God, somebody did this on their social media. Now it's a fucking headline. It's like, how about we make it a headline when Deebo Samuel like wants to request a trade or something? Then make it a fucking headline. But if Deebo Samuel does want to request a trade, I would love to see him come play for Dallas, but I don't think that would be an option just because they kind of seem like they're all in on CD Lamb, but I don't know. I like me some Deebo Samuel too, but I kind of have a feeling the Niners are going to do what it takes to hold on to him as they should, by the way. And then in some sad news, the offensive tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, legendary offensive tackle Rayfield Wright. He played for the Cowboys from 1967 to 1979. He passed away yesterday. It sounds like he had some complications due to a stroke. He'd been in the hospital the last like week or so. And he died yesterday. And he was a legendary Dallas Cowboy. You know, he was he played, like I said, he played from 1967 to 79. Those were like the Roger Staubach days. And so that's who he blocked for. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion, three-time first team, which means you are spectacular. He's also a Hall of Fame player, and he was inducted into the Cowboys Ring of Honor as well. So he's just a straight-up Cowboys legend. And sorry to see you go, man, but thank you for everything that you did as a Dallas Cowboy. And so Rayfield Wright, RIP, homie. So now let's move on to the NBA and let's take a look at this playoff picture, because the playoff teams are set. Basically all that we have this weekend now, everybody's playing for seeding. Who's going to end up where, who's going to play who come next week. Now everything's set. If you are out of the playoffs, you are out of the playoffs. So this weekend, it's just to see where we end up. And so let's start off in the Western Conference. Number one seed still, Phoenix Suns. Obviously, they've got that locked in. Number two, Memphis Grizzlies. Number three, Golden State Warriors. Number four, Dallas Mavericks. Number five, Utah Jazz. Number six, Denver Nuggets. And then in the play-in tournament, number seven seed would be the Minnesota Timberwolves. Number eight, Los Angeles Clippers. Number nine, New Orleans Pelicans. And number 10, the San Antonio Spurs. So that's the Western Conference side. Then over in the Eastern Conference, number one seed right now is the Miami Heat. The number two seed is the Milwaukee Bucks. And they just took over that number two seed last night. And so the Eastern Conference is really going to, it could shift by Monday. So we'll see what happens here. But right now it's currently number two, Milwaukee. Number three, Boston Celtics. Number four, Philadelphia 76ers. Number five, Toronto Raptors. And then number six, the Chicago Bulls. And moving into the play-in tournament, number seven seed are the Cleveland Cavaliers. Number eight, Brooklyn Nets. Number nine, Atlanta Hawks, and then number 10, the Charlotte Hornets. So that's what the playoff picture looks like right now. Like I said, this weekend could shake a couple things up, but for the most part, that's the way it's going to look. Obviously, I'll start making playoff predictions on my Monday show because all the play-in matchups will be set. I'll actually go through each round, who I think is going to make it all the way to the finals, and who I think is going to win it all, and then we'll see if those predictions turn out to be right, even though we all know so far my predictions have been pretty shitty so far this season. So we'll see how that goes for me. But at least my predictions aren't as shitty as the Los Angeles Lakers season ended up. Because notice, that playoff picture I was just going through, you know, a team was missing from that playoff picture, and that was my Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah, they ended up losing the other night. Monday, Tuesday, they lost to Phoenix. God, this season has been such a shit show. It's like hard to remember all these losses combined because there's been so many. Once again, LeBron didn't play. He was watching from the sidelines, you know, like the soccer mom he is, you know, not even cheering on his teammates, just sitting there with his sunglasses on in the building because he's the fucking cool guy. The cool guy who don't play basketball, apparently. They got their asses smashed by the Suns, and that was it. And I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad it's it, because I kind of have a feeling if they even would have made the play-in, they probably would have lost in the first play-in, and that's pathetic anyway. So I didn't expect them to do anything, even if they made the playoffs, and I'm just glad the bleeding has stopped and we can move along. It is kind of pathetic that there are still people out there who, like, think LeBron shouldn't be blamed for any aspect of the season. Obviously, he's not the only person. He individually had a good season, but he was playing GM LeBron, and so he gets to take all the negative energy for those stupid mistakes, those stupid choices that he wanted. He wanted Russell Westbrook, and we could have had other people instead of Russell Westbrook who possibly could have fit the mold a little bit better. He wanted Westbrook. We got Westbrook, and this is where our shitty fucking season ended up. Nowheresville. Now they're already talking about Frank Vogel's probably going to be fired. I mean, there's got to be a scapegoat. And honestly, I'm not really attached to Frank Vogel. It's just I don't really know what they expected him to do with what he was given. So, I mean, that was the Lakers season in a nutshell. Just absolutely sucked. They have, I think, two, three games to go this weekend. I think it's two. I don't recall. It really doesn't fucking matter at this point because none of them are playing. LeBron and Anthony Davis and Westbrook, none of them are playing these other games because they don't matter anyway. So why would they play? Very disappointing season as a Lakers fan. But LeBron definitely deserves the negative feedback he's receiving for this, because this is the team that he wanted. And sorry, that's what you want, that's what you get. And you don't get to sit here and blame Vogel, blame Jeannie Buss, blame everybody else, because you got exactly what you wanted and it wasn't able to work. And so something's got to change next year. It'll be interesting what needs to change. Something besides Frank Vogel, by the way. Like I said, I'm not attached to Frank Vogel. If they get somebody else, cool. But we got to do something about this old-ass team that we got, because LeBron's only getting older, so we need a little bit of young blood around him. I know he don't like to work with the young blood, but sorry, dude, that's what you're going to need to at least make it to the postseason. And then just something else that was interesting that the commissioner of basketball was talking about just the other day is something, a trend that started a few years ago, and it just keeps growing and increasing every single year, are star players basically taking regular season games off. And it's not due to injury. It's usually they just like to rest them. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing for them to rest their bodies, but it's just like when you're a fan, especially in the NBA, because the difference between the NBA and college basketball is NBA is star player driven. You usually have 2 to 3 big stars on your team, and then you build around them. In college basketball, it's straight up team ball, and it's all about the system, and it's all about the team working as one. So that's the difference between the two. And so when you're going and paying to see an NBA game, you expect to see, I don't know if you're a Lakers fan, and let's say, so I live near San Antonio, and I've gone to Spurs games before. Love going to Spurs games, as a matter of fact. But let's just say I'm going to a Spurs game, and it's Spurs versus Lakers. I'm expecting to see LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook play. I'm expecting to see them play unless they're injured. If they're injured, I'm not going to hold that against you because that's not their fault. But if you're just resting, that's bullshit. That is bullshit to all of us fans. Because that's what we're paying for. We're not paying to see the bench squad come out and play. And like I said, if you are actually injured, yeah, go ahead, sit. But if you're just skipping games, to skip games, that you're an asshole. Honestly, you're just a fucking asshole. At least that's coming from a fan perspective. And if you don't know, sports tickets are not fucking cheap. They're actually pretty goddamn expensive. So we're spending a lot of money to go see these players play. And, you know, most of us aren't millionaires. We aren't balling hard like these basketball players are. You know, a lot of us to even just go to one game, because I always feel fortunate when I'm going to a game or a concert. I feel like, hell yeah, I'm here, because there are some people I know who have never been to a game ever. And I understand why, because it's a very expensive experience, from the parking to the ticket to anything you want to buy at the arena. It's all expensive. And I'm not saying feel sorry for us. I mean, hey, it is what it is. But when you're buying tickets to a game, you expect to see the stars out there. And if you don't see the stars out there, it is a waste of money. And so it is a problem. And I know they've tried ways to alleviate this. And one of the ways is they're not really doing back-to-back games as often as they were a few years ago. It's something they've tried to work on over the last couple of seasons. But honestly, us fans really don't give a shit. We want to see the players we're paying to see. And instead of seeing them sitting there filing their nails on the fucking sideline, we don't want to see that shit. So something does need to be done about that. I don't know what they could do, because obviously you can't like force people to play either, but it's just really ridiculous when tickets are that expensive and you don't see the star players out there playing, especially when your team is in contention for the playoffs. Yeah, that kind of pisses you off as well, even if you're not at the fucking game. All right, and now let's move on to baseball. Not much baseball news happened so far. I mean, you know, opening day just happened yesterday. There were some good-ass games yesterday, too. And we're just getting started. But there was a big trade this week. The Twins ended up trading their relief pitcher, Taylor Rogers, to the San Diego Padres for their starting pitcher, Chris Paddock. And the only reason why I'm highlighting this is because I think the Padres are overall a good team. I think they're definitely going to be a team in contention for the playoffs. I don't know if I would call them World Series worthy, but I definitely think they're going to make some noise. And I think this trade only makes them a much stronger team. Because I already like their starting pitching. I think it's very deep. So them trading Paddock actually isn't like a loss. Whereas they're gaining Taylor Rogers, who was the closer for the Twins last year. And he had something like 30 plus saves last year. So he's actually a very solid closer. And so this really just bolsters the Padres and makes them a much, much better team. And so I just found that to be a very interesting trade that happened this week. But not much has gone on in baseball because it just started. And it's just great to have some baseball on, especially while I'm doing the show. Still 3-2. Boston's up the bottom of the third right now on the Yankees. All right, so since we're talking baseball, and I did mention in my last episode, one of the players of the past in baseball who I wish I could have seen would be Reggie Jackson. And so that got me thinking. I'm like, well, you know what? There isn't a whole lot to talk about today. So I was like, I got to think of a top 10 list. And so I'm going to do the top 10 MLB players of the past that I wish I could have seen. And it was a difficult list to actually dwindle down as well, because there are a lot of great players of the past. But I think I was able to find 10 who I just 100% wish I could have seen. So let's go ahead and start off with the top 10 MLB players of the past, starting with number 10. Number 10, Ty Cobb. He was the center fielder, most notably for the Detroit Tigers. He was with the Detroit Tigers from 1905 to 1926, and then he was with the A's from 1927 to 1928, so for just one season. But he's one of the most... greatest baseball players ever, like one of the first greatest baseball players ever. He was actually the first ever player ever inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He has owned or currently owns at least 90 MLB records throughout his entire career. He was basically he just was straight up baseball all around. He was great from the day he hit the league. Unfortunately, that didn't work out too well for him when he first hit the league, because the majority of his veteran teammates were very jealous of how good he was, and he actually had to deal with a lot of shitty-ass hazing to start his season. And so he actually credits that to being why he was such an asshole, because one of the reasons... he's kind of known as an asshole is because when he would steal base, because that was really what he was known for, was stealing home, and stealing bases in general, is he would come at you, he would literally come at you with the spikes out, and he would use them as a weapon, and he was very scrappy. He was known as a brawler, and part of the reason why he thinks he was that way is because of his treatment his rookie season. And to watch like highlights of him is just crazy, because he was just such a spectacular player. A couple of the records that he has either owned or currently owns, he's got 4,665 scored runs and RBIs, which is the highest by any player. His career batting average is a 366, which is currently a record. His career hits, 4,189, was a record, and was a record until 1985. Career runs, 2,245, that was a record until 2001. His career games, 3,035, was a record until 1974. Career at bats, 11,429, was a record until 1974. Most stolen bases, 892, that remained a record until 1977. And he still, to this day, owns the most stolen home, 54. That's 54 stolen home bases. That's a record. And that's just crazy, because stealing home is such a... It's not something that you normally throw into the rep, especially these days. But he was just known for stealing home. And he was great at it. He was also the youngest player to compile 4,000 hits and 2,000 runs. He was AL MVP in 1911. He won the Triple Crown in 1909. He's a 12-time AL batting champion from 1907 to 1915, and then from 1907 to 1919. He was the AL home run leader in 1909, four-time AL RBI leader in 1907 through 1909 and 1911. He's the six-time AL stolen base leader. And then just something else, apparently after he had died, an old sports reporter who apparently didn't like him kind of started this rumor that that Ty Cobb was racist. And actually turns out that actually is not true at all. It turns out he was actually a huge advocate for the Negro League players at the time. And that was a big deal, especially in the early 1900s. He would actually go to their games. He was a regular attendance at their games, and he would even go and visit with the teams in their dugouts after their games were over and give them advice on how to become better baseball players. So it was very interesting to kind of see that he seemed like an asshole on the field, but he actually was a huge advocate for the Negro League players, and he had no issues if he were to play with a black guy. Obviously, it didn't happen in his time because Jackie Robinson didn't break the barrier until way after that. But to hear somebody be open about it at that time was a big deal. All right, and then so number 9 on my top 10 MLB players of the past that I'd like to have seen play live, Joe DiMaggio. He played for the Yankees, of course, from 1936 to 1942. Then he came back. He had to go fight in World War II, and then he came back in 1946 and then retired in 1951, basically just due to injuries. He was a New York Yankees center fielder, and he's a 13-time All-Star. He's a 9-time World Series champion. That's second most. He's only behind Yogi Berra, who I believe has 13, so... Damn, right there. He won the World Series 1936 through 1939, 1941, 1947, and then 1949 through 1951. Also to be noted, he went to 10 World Series and won 9 of them. He's a 3-time AL MVP. He won in 1939, 1941, and 1947. 2-time AL batting champion. 2-time AL home run leader. 2-time AL RBI leader. And he once held the MLB record 56-game hitting streak. And he, when you watch old highlights of him, he has one of the prettiest swings of all time. That's what he was mostly known for, was his hitting. And he was a spectacular hitter, especially for the time. So would have loved to have seen Joe DiMaggio play. Then number 8 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Juan Marichal. I had to put some Giants on here, and I do have a couple of San Francisco Giants on here. And Juan Marichal, he's one of the legendary starting pitchers for the Giants. He played for the Giants from 1960 to 1973. Then he played for Boston in 1974, and then he played for the Dodgers, boo, in 1975. His career record is 243 wins, 142 losses. He's got a career 289 ERA, and with 2,303 strikeouts. He's a 10-time All-Star. He was the NL wins leader in 1968, MLB ERA leader in 1969, and he pitched a no-hitter on June 15th, 1963. And also, he was a part of one of the greatest games ever pitched. That's not my quote. That's actually what it's called. The game is called the greatest game, one of the greatest games ever pitched, and it's because... it was in July 2nd of 1963, Milwaukee Braves versus San Francisco Giants. This game ended up going 16 innings. Now, when a game these days goes that long, you're lucky if you still have a bullpen left at that point. Well, not in this day. In this day, Juan Marichal and the Braves pitcher, I can't recall his name right now off the top of my head, and I didn't write his name down, but... Juan Marichal pitched all 16 innings. The Milwaukee Braves pitchers pitched like 15 and a third, 15, something like, he went 15 innings, but both starting pitchers went the full distance. That's insane. And especially with the way Juan Marichal pitched, he was known for this high kick leg of his. People have never really used the high kick the way he does, but it was his secret weapon. And also in this game, to be noted, Hank Aaron at the time played for the Milwaukee Braves. If you don't know, Hank Aaron is one of the greatest baseball players of all time. He's known for being a home run hitter. As a matter of fact, you know, he's like the home run. He had that record for a long time as the home run king. In this game, he went 0 for 6. So Juan Marichal actually owned Hank Aaron's ass in a 16-inning marathon, which the Giants ended up winning thanks to Willie Mays. So yeah, Juan Marichal, wish I could have seen him play. Then number 7 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, good old Babe Ruth. You got to have this dude on here. I kind of feel like if you're a baseball fan of any caliber, you will have wanted to have seen, at least seen, how Babe Ruth played. Whether, you know, because things from the past, they always get romanticized. And that's something I've always noticed getting older in my life. Like, you always see things, and like when somebody dies, people always romanticize them and make them seem like they were bigger than they actually were. So that's one of the reasons why I'd like to see Babe Ruth, if maybe people just like are romanticizing him. Now, when you look at his stats, obviously he was a spectacular player. He was both a pitcher and he played outfield. He was a starting pitcher when he first started out, 1914 to 1919. He was with the Boston Red Sox, who ended up trading him to the New York Yankees, and he played with the Yankees from 1920 to 1934, and he's mostly known as a Yankee because that's really where he did his damage, and that's when he took over. His nickname was the Great Bambino. And he just absolutely dominated, and he was just known for hitting home runs like crazy. And it was just cool. He did eventually stop pitching over time, but at one point he was a pitcher and a hitter at the same time, which was never commonplace. It's still not commonplace, and only Shohei Ohtani is who currently plays for the Angels right now. He's the only one doing that, and so it's crazy to think that a great player used to do that. So yeah, he was starting pitcher mostly when he was with the Red Sox. And then outfielder with the Yankees for the most part. But basically, he owns tons of records. One of the all-time legends. He's a seven-time World Series champ, won the World Series in 1915, 1916, 1918, 1923, 1927, 1928, and 1932. AL MVP in 1923, AL batting champion in 1924, 12-time AL home run leader, 5-time AL RBI leader, and he was the AL ERA leader as a pitcher when he played for the Boston Red Sox in 1916. So Babe Ruth is a legend, just statistically, but like I said, it would be cool to have actually like seen him play and be like, wow, and just kind of know what type of a legend he was, just to see if he really was that great or if it's just romanticized baseball talk. But from what I can tell, it looks like it's pretty legit, but hey, things always get romanticized with everybody in every way, shape, and form. So then at number 6 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I have Hank Aaron, right fielder for the Milwaukee/Atlanta Braves. He played for them from 1954 to 1974, and then he played from 1975 to 1976 for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he, like I said, straight up legend. He's known for home runs for sure. He's the home run king. He's a 25-time All-Star. Literally his entire career, every year of his career, he was voted to the All-Star game. So that's nuts. He was World Series champion in 1957. He won the NL MVP in 1957. He's a 3-time Gold Glove Award winner, 2-time NL batting champion, 4-time NL home run leader, and the 4-time NL RBI leader. And a couple of records that he currently still owns. Career runs batted in, 2,297. Career total bases, 6,856. Career extra base hits, 1,477. And then he broke Babe Ruth's home run record at 755. So Hank Aaron, one of the greats of all time, and I would have absolutely have loved to have seen him play. Then at number 5 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Jackie freaking Robinson. That's another guy I kind of feel like right up there with Babe Ruth. If you're just a baseball fan, it would have been nice to see not only him break the color barrier, but that's not what I focus on, really, for me. It's that he was a damn good baseball player. He played for the Brooklyn Dodgers from 1947 to 1956. He started at first base, but he's mostly known as a second baseman. Like I said, he broke the color barrier in baseball, but he also broke the color barrier as a baseball analyst as well. No black guy had ever been an analyst until Jackie Robinson. And he actually, there's a whole bunch of other accolades Jackie Robinson has for breaking the color barrier at the same at that time in life that kind of just seemed like that was his calling. And he really did it too. If you actually go read about him, you'll just be amazed at what a person he was. But we're talking about his baseball career, and here are some more stats about how great Jackie Robinson was. He was a six-time All-Star, won a World Series in 1955, NL MVP in 1949. That was his first year, I believe. That was his third year in the league. He was the MLB Rookie of the Year, NL Batting Champion in 1949, and then he was the two-time NL Stolen Base Leader. Jackie Robinson, spectacular baseball player. Would have loved to seen him play. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Pete Rose. Man, this guy, if you just look at him statistically, he is just made to play baseball. Like, he owns so many records. He's won so many World Series with different teams, by the way. And he just was a great baseball player from start to finish. So he played for the Cincinnati Reds from 1963 to 1978. Then he played for the Philadelphia Phillies from 1979 to 1983. He played with the Montreal Expos in 1984. And then he rounded out his career from 1984 to 1986 with the Cincinnati Reds. And then he actually was the manager for the Cincinnati Reds from 84 to 89. And we all know how that ended, by the way, with his gambling shit. In his playing career, he basically played every position on the field. He played second base, first base, third base, outfield. Like, he basically, the only positions he didn't play were pitcher and catcher. And I wouldn't be shocked if at one point, due to injuries, he probably had to step in and play catcher at some point. But, like, this dude was just made to play baseball. That's why it's bullshit that he's not in the Hall of Fame. I've already gone on a couple rants about the Baseball Hall of Fame and how I hate their process and how provincial they are about who they let in. We all know the reason why Pete Rose isn't in is because of the gambling that he got in trouble for as a manager. And don't get me wrong, I do think he obviously should suffer consequences because, you know, I went over this when the wide receiver from the Falcons, can't remember his name right now, but he's suspended for the year because he bet on NFL games, and he should be suspended for the year because you shouldn't be gambling on your team, your sport. Those are the rules, and that's literally rule number one of being in sports. But I think it's completely egregious to be keeping Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame because he is baseball. When you think of a baseball player, Pete Rose, I mean, if you just go look at his statistics alone, if you watch how the dude played baseball, that's what he was born to do, was to play baseball. He was a 17-time All-Star, three-time World Series champ. He won two with the Reds, one with the Phillies. He was the NL MVP in 1973, World Series MVP in 1975, NL Rookie of the Year, two-time Gold Glove Award winner, Silver Slugger Award winner, Roberto Clemente Award winner, and three-time NL batting champion. Some of the records he still currently holds: career hits, 4,256. Career singles, 3,215. Career games played, 3,562. Career at bats, 14,053. And career plate appearances, 15,890. So, you know, Pete Rose, when you watch highlights of him, he must have been so much fun to have seen play live. And that's why he had to 100% be in my top five. As a matter of fact, my top five was actually really difficult for me to dwindle down. The whole top 10 really was kind of difficult just because all of these guys, especially when I went back and watched some of their highlights, I'm just like, man, it's just crazy to think that, like, that's how the game was back then. Like, especially, like I said, with, like, Joe DiMaggio and his swing, how beautiful his swing was. But then you look at it, and in today's game, I've mentioned before, I love Shohei Ohtani's swing. He's got a beautiful swing, and it really actually reminds me of Joe DiMaggio, who played in fucking 1936. So it's crazy that the game is basically still the same. 100-plus years later. So at number three on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I have Willie Mays. Played for my San Francisco Giants. Actually, he played for the Giants when they were in New York as well. So he played for the Giants from 1951 to 1952. Then he had to go, I think it was the Korean War at the time, so he had to go serve in the military at that point. Came back and played baseball in 1954 to 1972. And then he played 1972 to 1973 with the New York Mets. He was a center fielder, and he's just he's basically one of the greatest baseball players of all time. He's just another dude who owns a whole bunch of records. He's a 24-time All-Star. He's a World Series champion in 1954, two-time NL MVP. NL Rookie of the Year, 12-time Gold Glove Award winner. I mean, he has one of the most iconic catches of all time where he's running towards the, running out in the outfield and the ball is coming at him backwards and he just catches the ball right over his shoulder. So that's not shocking. He's a 12-time Gold Glove Award winner. He's won the Roberto Clemente Award. He's been an NL batting champion, 4-time NL home run leader, 4-time NL stolen base leader. And he hit 4 home runs in one game on April 30th, 1961. So, you know, Willie Mays, he's just overall, because not only was he great as a hitter, but he is known just as much for what he did defensively as he did as a hitter. And that's kind of rare because usually you're mostly known for one or the other. And he was just an all-around great baseball player. Would have loved to have seen Willie Mays play baseball. Then number two on my top 10 NBA players of the past, the guy who is the reason why I started this list, and that is Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson played for the Kansas City / Oakland A's from 1967 to 1975, and he went and played for Baltimore in 1976. Then he played for the New York Yankees from 1977 to 1981, played for the Angels from 1982 to 1986, and rounded out his career in 1987 as an Oakland A. He was a right fielder. He was known as Mr. October. That's what he's mostly known for, is how he would step it up come playoff time. But here's a little bit of his accolades. Other than that, he was a 14-time All-Star, 5-time World Series champion. Now, he won World Series from 1972, 1973, and 1974. He won those with the A's, and then 77 and 78, he won those with the Yankees. So he's won with two separate teams, too. That dude, there's just nothing bad, in my opinion, you could say about Reggie Jackson and the way he played baseball. He was the AL MVP in 1973, two-time World Series MVP in 73 and 77, two-time Silver Slugger Award winner, 4-time AL home run leader, and the AL RBI leader. So Reggie Jackson. And just when you watch highlights of him, he was such an exciting player to see. He was such a game changer, too. There's so many games in the postseason. That's why he's known as Mr. October, because he would come up to bat and he would change the trajectory of the game. Just kind of like the Yankees just did right now. They just tied shit up. It's 3-3 in the bottom of the fourth. Yankees just tied that up. So that's what I'm talking about, man. Baseball, always fun to watch, at least in my opinion. But that is what Reggie Jackson would do. He was a game changer. He would come up to bat and he would change the game with just one swing of the bat. Reggie Jackson, great baseball player. And so number one on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I wish I could have seen. Now, this guy right here, I only got to see like the last 2 years of his career because he retired in 1993. So I had to put him on here because I did like those last couple of years that I did see. But number one on my list is one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And his name is Nolan Ryan. First of all, the name alone screams I'm a baseball player. That's all I got to say about that. But he was he pitched for the New York Mets from 1966 to 1971. He pitched for the Angels from 1972 to 1979. He pitched for the Houston Astros from 1980 to 1988. And then the Texas Rangers from 1989 to 1993. One of the things he was known for is his 100 mile per hour fastball. And he maintained that velocity throughout his entire career, which is absolutely nuts, especially at the time he played, because these days pitchers barely make it past like 4, 5, 6 innings. If they're in there for 6 innings, like that's a long ass time for a starting pitcher to be in. Well, not with Nolan Ryan. That motherfucker, he was just great. Not only as a pitcher, but he was not a little bitch either. There are so many fights you could see that he got in. That was actually what I loved most about him as a kid. Because that I saw a couple of the fights that he got in when he played for the Rangers, and I was like, that's the dude. I like that guy. But other than that, you know, he's an 8-time All-Star. He won a World Series in 1969, 2-time NL ERA leader, 11-time strikeout leader, and some MLB records he still holds to this day. Career strikeouts, 5,714, and 7 career no-hitters, which to this day, nobody has done. And that's just the thing about him. Like, he was just one of the greatest pitchers of all time. When you watch highlights of him, you're just blown away, especially me. And it's crazy to think, because he never won a Cy Young. He never won an MVP. But I mean, when you sit back and look at greatest pitchers of all time, you have to put Nolan Ryan in there. And he's just number one on my list. I wish I could have seen more than like 2 years of his career, because in 93, I was in like third grade. So even what I know of the couple of years of his career I saw, it's not like at the forefront of my brain, you know. It's not like when I watched like Derek Jeter's entire career. I remember like everything about it. Or Barry Bonds, too, you know, like I remember everything about Barry Bonds' career. I remember when he broke the record, when he broke Willie Mays' home run record. I remember that day vividly. So Nolan Ryan's career, I don't remember vividly. But man, if I could have seen anybody play, I would have loved to see Nolan Ryan pitch. Just the way he pitched. And to see somebody maintain 100 mile per hour velocity, I actually wouldn't be shocked. If the old guy could still pitch 100 mile per hour fastball to this day. That's my list of MLB, top 10 MLB players of the past I wish I could have seen. Like I said, it was a tough list to dwindle down because there was even more than 10. But I didn't want to put too many in because that's a lot of research. And I mean, you probably get lost after a while. Break it down, number 10 was Ty Cobb, number 9, Joe DiMaggio. Number 8, Juan Marichal. Number 7, Babe Ruth. Number 6, Hank Aaron. Number 5, Jackie Robinson. Number 4, Pete Rose. Number 3, Willie Mays. Number 2, Reggie Jackson. And number 1, Nolan Ryan. So, that's a great list of old players from the past who I wish I could have seen play. And now it's a start of a new baseball season. We'll see what legends are made this year. We'll see what happens come playoff time. We'll see what happens this weekend with the NBA and how the playoff picture unfolds. And I'll be talking about all the playoff matchups on Monday. And tonight, I am going to see my favorite rapper of all time, Ice Cube. I'm going to see actually Mount Westmore. That is the rap group of Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, E-40, and Too Short. I've never seen Snoop Dogg, E-40, or Too Short, so I'm excited to see them live. Going to be the 5th time I've seen Ice Cube live. Like I said, he's my favorite rapper. Always got to check out Cube when he rolls through. Very excited because this is my first concert post-COVID as well. The last concert I saw before we shut down, the week before Austin, Texas shut down for COVID, I went and saw Ice Cube. So he is where I'm picking up right where I left off before COVID. So I'm very excited to be seeing Ice Cube tonight. I know he's going to put on a great fucking show. Everybody enjoy the weekend of baseball and basketball. And I will talk to y'all on Monday.